If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Good afternoon. For Talk Radio News Service, I'm Jeff Holtzman. During the debate over health care reform back in 2009, President Obama famously said this.
If you like your health care plan, you'll be able to keep your health care plan.
But since the beginning of the year, many Americans have received notices that their health insurance plans are being canceled, mainly because the plans don't meet the new standards within the Affordable Care Act. Today, Obama's top spokesman was basically forced to admit that the law has caused thousands of people to switch plans.
It's true that there are existing health care plans on the individual market that don't meet those minimum standards and therefore do not qualify for the Affordable Care Act.
White House Press Secretary Jay Carney added that because of Obamacare, just 6 out of every 10 Americans who sign up will see lower prices. That means that 40% of them will experience higher premiums next year. Carney explained, however, that the higher costs for some will mean better insurance.
It's not even an apples and apples comparison. This is qualitatively better insurance coverage than what was available in many cases.
Jeff Holtzman, Talk Radio News Service, Washington.
There's no time to kill between the cradle and the grave. Father, time still takes a toll on every minute that you save. Legal tender's never gonna change the number on your days. The highest cost of living's dying, that's one everybody pays. So have it spent before you get the bill. There's no time to kill.
Welcome to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Inside Tennessee is sponsored by the Tennessee Action Council, an educational organization dedicated to restoring constitutionally limited government and the Judeo-Christian values that made our country great. Visit our website at tn4action.com. That's tn4action.com. The phone number to call and join the conversation is 718-305-7176. That is 718-305-7176. And thank you so much for being with us tonight. We have a couple of other great guests lined up for you. We're going to have David Fowler from the Family Action Council join us here in just a few minutes. And we have Lisa Moore from the Act for America Rutherford County Chapter. Lisa is one of those Tennessee textbook warriors you may have heard about. When David gets on with us here in just a few minutes, we're going to be talking about the threat to marriage in Tennessee. Now, I know that seems kind of strange. We're one of the reddest states. And you would think that marriage would be safe here in terms of traditional marriage between a man and a woman. And, in fact, it's in the Tennessee Constitution that marriage is only a man and a woman. Unfortunately, some of these other states that have allowed same-sex marriage, they have 4 couples that were married in some of those other states and came to Tennessee, and now they want a federal judge to force Tennessee to recognize their marriage in Tennessee. And then, of course, the next step would be, after that, to legalize gay marriage, period. I mean, they're not going to stop with just having it recognized if it happens in another state. But what does that say about what they think about our state sovereignty, our traditional values? Obviously, they don't care. That's one thing to remember. You know, you hear the left, the radical homosexual activists and others talk about tolerance, talk about acceptance. It's never been about tolerance and acceptance. It's always been about them forcing their perverse way of life on everybody else. So we just need to keep that in mind, and I'm sure if you haven't figured it out by now, you will, unfortunately. But this is going to go through the courts. Don't know exactly how it'll turn out, but that is their goal. Their first short-term goal, of course, is to have their marriage recognized, and then their second goal will be to forced gay marriage on Tennessee. And without any further ado, we have Dave Fowler on the line here with us. How you doing tonight,
hey,
Dave?
Hey, I'm doing well. And this time I remembered to set my clock on PM, not AM. I don't know if you remember. Last time I set my clock to go off, so I remembered to call, and I forgot to switch it from AM to PM. So.
Well, I'm glad you
remembered
this time.
I was going to be about 12 hours late, so I'm glad to be on time today.
Well, we appreciate you coming on.
Well, I appreciate
gave just
it.
A,
Go ahead.
Before we get into it, I gave everybody just a little overview of the topic. If you don't want to talk about this specific thing, that's fine and well. But you have a project that's going to be brought to light here fairly soon, don't you? We talked about it earlier tonight.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about that just real quick?
Well, just thank you real quickly. Yeah, I have my first book, which may be my last book, that will be coming out in about 3 or 4 weeks, I hope. Was proofreading the galleys tonight, and it's called The Politics of Loving God. And the real theme of the book is simply that, rightly understood, if we love God and love our neighbor well, we cannot fail to be engaged in politics at some level. And that's because, one, power ultimately finally comes from God. And if we have the power of the ballot box, we'll give an accounting to God someday for how we used it. The second thought is, because the law is a moral tutor and teaches us right and wrong, we don't really love our neighbor if we don't care what the law is helping teach them. Just the same as somebody say, well, you're a horrible parent. You never tell your kids, you know, no, or they can't do this or can't do that, or you need to do this. And so the premise of the book is that loving God and loving our neighbor is consistent with being engaged in politics. So that's the book.
Great.
And it's short.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
135 pages, yeah. So I won't put anybody to sleep, I don't think. So
no
thank
excuse
you for
not
that
to read it. No, 135 pages, nobody has any excuse for not reading it.
Well, that's right. And actually, at the suggestion of a couple of folks, I added some group discussion questions at the end so that it could be used for a small group, you know, if a group of men are meeting together or couples or whatever. There's some discussion questions for each of the 12 chapters. So hope folks will enjoy it, and it'll be available on Amazon. And so thanks for the opportunity to talk about it.
Sure. I'm looking forward to it.
Sure.
Back to our main topic. As you well know, the four same-sex couples that were married in different states came to Tennessee, and now they want a federal judge to basically force Tennessee to recognize their marriage.
That's correct. That's exactly what they did. And the lawsuit, in part, is being sponsored by the National Center for Lesbian Rights, so I'm glad they felt they needed to stick their nose into our state's business. And we'll see what happens. There are a lot of procedural questions that I've been asked. You know, well, what does this mean? And what it would mean if we lose is that anybody who gets married in another state, we would have to recognize their marriage, including people from Tennessee who would just, you know, maybe go up to Massachusetts, for example, get married and come back home. You know, there wouldn't be any requirement that you actually lived out of state at the time of the marriage necessarily. So it's a backdoor way to impose gay marriage on everybody. And ultimately, there will be a second lawsuit filed, and I don't know what the timing will be, but it will be a lawsuit saying that it's unconstitutional to prohibit two men who live in Tennessee from getting married in the first instance. So this first argument is really sort of a case of full faith and credit, the contract clause that, hey, there's a marriage that's been recognized in another state, and they've moved here, and you are discriminating. And their main argument is equal protection, that you will recognize a marriage from Massachusetts unless it's a same-sex marriage, and therefore you're discriminating by excluding just one type of marriage. Now, our argument would be that, well, marriage is by definition a man and a woman, so we're not by definition excluding anything. You know, a circle's not a square, so sorry. But it's going to be an important case of states' rights, really, and people need to appreciate that the Supreme Court this summer, when they struck down part of the Defense of Marriage Act, did not strike down the part that allowed states to decide whether to recognize other states' marriages. All they struck down was the part of the federal law that said, for federal law purposes, a marriage is a man and a woman. And the court had a lot of language in the opinion that the federal government shouldn't be trying to define marriage because it is historically inherently been a state issue to decide who's married and who's not. So we hope that that same philosophy will carry forward, that it should be up to each state to decide what to do. Of course, the homosexual community is using some of the language that the court said that, you know, Congress trying to define marriage as a man and a woman is simply discriminatory, unreasonable, has no rational purpose, and so they're throwing that language out, and we're saying, well, you know, that may be what the court thinks when it comes to the federal level, but at the state level, we have the freedom to do that. So it's really, I think people need to appreciate, it's as much a state's rights issue as it is a marriage issue. It's both.
In the Supreme Court's decision, did they make any reference at all to the full faith and credit issue?
No, they didn't. They didn't get into that issue. Like I say, that section of the Defense of Marriage Act that allowed states to recognize or not recognize other states' marriages, that was not challenged. So we'll see what happens. Now, procedurally, for your listeners, as to where we are, the Attorney General is the attorney for our state, and he's to defend the state when we're sued. So the Attorney General's office will have to decide whether to defend the law or not. What they'll do, I don't know. I will say that I did a little digging and found that several years ago, when the Defense of Marriage Act was enacted in our state back in 1996, that the Attorney General did issue an opinion to the effect that he thought that the law was defensible. That, in other words, it wouldn't be unconstitutional. So we do have the Attorney General's office on record for saying that it wouldn't violate the Equal Protection Clause, and you know, whether this Attorney General will adhere to those previous opinions of his office, I don't know. He may say that, well, since 1996, when his office issued that opinion, we now have the Windsor case that came out, and in light of the Windsor case, you know, my opinions are no longer valid, and he may choose to not defend the law.
Yeah, I want to get back to the Windsor case here in just a second. I've got to do a quick read, and then I want you to maybe go into a little detail on the Windsor case.
Okay.
If you love conservative internet radio as much as we do, then you already know about the Grit and Grace radio show. Jennifer Meadows and Josh Bernstein have carried the conservative message for the net for years, and now they are here on conservativenationmedia.com. Join Grit and Grace every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central for solid American patriotism, unapologetic commentary, the latest news and conservative analysis with a good dose of old plain-fashioned fun. That's Grit and Grace every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we are talking to David Fowler about the issue of gay marriage in Tennessee. We have some four homosexual couples that decided that they would sue our state to force our state to recognize same-sex marriage from other states, and then ultimately they'd like to force the whole thing on us. Dave, you mentioned the Windsor case. Can you give a little bit of background on that?
Yeah, the Windsor case was a case the Supreme Court heard this summer. They heard two different cases. One was the case dealing with Proposition 8 out of California, and the court essentially said, we're not going to really hear that case. Nobody has standing to be in front of the court. So they just dismissed it and left it where it was, which was being held unconstitutional by the lower court. But then the Windsor case was over the Defense of Marriage Act, and it was a lesbian couple. One of them was about to die. They flew in an airplane to, I don't know what state it was, actually got married on the tarmac and flew back. And then, sure enough, the sick partner passed away. and there was a large estate tax because they did not qualify for the marital deduction. And so they sued, saying that that's unconstitutional, that I should get a marital deduction the same as a man and a woman. And ultimately, the Supreme Court agreed with them. Now, there's a whole lots of problems that are for lawyers to argue about, but one of the great travesties of constitutional law, and our Constitution is just being shredded every day by what's going on in Washington politics, is that the Constitution requires that there actually be a case or a controversy in front of the court. In other words, you and I can't say, well, I wonder what the answer would be to this. Let's go down to the courthouse and pretend we'll sue each other and see what the court says. They'll say, well, you know, you don't have a real claim against David Vance. Neither have one against you. That's not a case. We dismiss it. Well, in this case, the government agreed with them, gave her the tax refund, and technically that should have been the end of the case because there was no longer a controversy. But the Supreme Court said, well, yeah, but we're going to go ahead and hear it anyway. I mean, that in itself, you know, is just amazing to me how little regard our Supreme Court has for the U.S. Constitution. But they did ultimately strike down the federal marriage definition and said that the federal government had no business defining marriage and should rely on the states. And, of course, that's what's opened the door now to all kinds of stuff. Where the federal government is in my opinion, again, disregarding the opinion, because the opinion said that the federal government can't define marriage, so it has to look to the definition of marriage at the state level. Well, okay, well, what that means is that if somebody gets married in Massachusetts, a gay couple, and they die, well, for federal tax purposes, they get a marital deduction. But in Tennessee, they wouldn't. Because under our law, they're not married. And now right. The IRS, everybody's just saying, well, we're going to treat them all married anyway. So, again, they're just disregarding the Supreme Court's decision, saying the federal government needs to look at the law of the states, and nobody in Congress or anywhere is jumping up and down and telling the IRS and everybody else, you can't do that. I mean, if you ask me, just all this stuff's wicked, just the disregard for the Constitution. I can't think of any other good word for it.
Yeah. Well, no argument
but
there.
But that's me. I'm a conservative, so I'm just a mean guy, I guess.
Well, you and most of the good Tennesseans, I think, agree with you, and I'd say that's the majority in our state. Dave, we're going to take another real quick break, and when we get back, I want to talk back about when this thing, you know, might actually kick off in terms of the court date. Don't go away.
Yeah,
okay. We'll be right back with David Fowler.
The Internet's official rhino hunting safari.
Been looking for an online gathering place? You know, a familiar screen, does everything you're used to, except give you grief for being a conservative? You've got to try the Tea Party community. At TPC, you'll know how everything works from the very first minute, and you'll probably find a lot of friends who are already there. Organize, communicate, share ideas, upcoming events, pictures, and videos. The Tea Party community connects and empowers like-minded, politically conservative people like you. Sign up today at teapartycommunity.com.
Molon LeVay Challenge Coins and Wares. Similar to challenge coins used by various military units, these MLCCW coins are ideal for anyone that champions the right to keep and bear arms by highlighting the Second Amendment and the Greek phrase Molon LeVay, which translated means come and take them. Come check out our pro-freedom, pro-liberty, and pro-Second Amendment coins and shirts at MLCCW.com. That's MLCCW.com.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. We're speaking with David Fowler from Family Action Council of Tennessee. David, right before the break, we were talking about this lawsuit, and our attorney general would be defending our state. Do we have a timeline, or has the suit just been filed and it's kind of up in the air on time?
Yeah, it was just filed on Monday, and typically by rule, a defendant has 30 days from the date they are actually served with the papers, and you may or may not be served on the very day the complaint gets filed. It may be a day or two later. My guess is the attorney general will ask for some time to review the complaint, and it's just sort of a matter of professional courtesy to not force somebody to have to answer in 30 days. So I would suspect that, in the next 60 days, maybe 90 days, the attorney general will have reviewed the case and made a decision as to what to do. If the attorney general does decline to sue, then by law, Lieutenant Governor Ron Ramsey as Speaker of the Senate and Beth Harwell as Speaker of the House can agree to hire an attorney to defend the lawsuit and pay for it out of the state's general treasury funds. Unfortunately, there's not really anything in the law beyond that. If the two speakers didn't agree, I'm not exactly sure what would happen, just to be honest. But I can't really imagine that Speaker Harwell and Lieutenant Governor Ramsey wouldn't hire an attorney to defend the law. But
do you think there's a chance that the attorney general would not fight this?
Well, as I said, there are previous opinions from his office back in 96 that said, yes, it's constitutionally defensible. But, of course, that was prior to the Windsor decision. Knowing the attorney general is politically liberal, having read some of his opinions on other matters where, I've been left sort of scratching my head, I'm not going to be shocked if he declines to defend. I'll be perfectly honest. If he's not fully on board, if he's not fully convinced that he can make sound, cogent arguments and he's going to defend the statutes vigorously and zealously, then I would rather him not defend the lawsuit. I mean, the worst thing you want is to be, for instance, we've got the World Series going on, and the Cardinals certainly don't want to have, the team, the Boston Red Sox pitcher throwing to the Boston Red Sox. He's going to lob them over the plate every time. So you'd rather not have somebody representing you if they're not zealously going to defend the lawsuit. And in that case, I would rather the two speakers go out and hire somebody that not only has their legal heart into it, but their heart and soul, so to speak, in it.
Would they be able to hire, say, lawyers from like Alliance Defense Fund or some organization
they could
like that?
Sure, they could hire somebody like that. And I would imagine that there would be any number of like Liberty Council, Liberty Institute, Alliance Defending Freedom, ACLJ, any number of those would probably be interested in it. I don't think ACLJ, American Center for Law and Justice, has done a lot on the marriage issue itself. It's done some discrimination issues, but not marriage lawsuits. So we'll see. I've already contacted my my friends at Alliance Defending Freedom to let them know about the lawsuit, and they're going to take a look at it so that they can advise us down the road as to what they think. But people need to appreciate this really is a significant thing. If the court strikes down our marriage law, I would hope that we would appeal to the Sixth Circuit. And then from there, I would hope if we lost, we would appeal to the Supreme Court. In terms of timing on all that, according to my friends who do a lot of litigation, they said that the earliest they thought this case would be decided in the trial court would be sometime next summer, late next summer, July, August. But said, you know, depending upon who it's assigned to and how much discovery they take, you know, it might be early part of 2015. Then if you go to the Court of Appeals, you can kind of count on another 9 months to a year. From there, it would take 9 months to a year for the Supreme Court, whether they decide to hear the case, and then they would hear it. So this whole process could easily take 3 or 4 years.
Wow.
And I hate to say, I don't know whether there are cases like ours that are ahead of ours in the system. My guess is this is not the first lawsuit of this kind that's been filed since the Windsor decision this summer. So, in other words, there may be a case in in another state like Louisiana, let's say, that was filed 2 or 3 months ago, and you know that case might get to the Supreme Court before ours would, and the court might decide to consolidate the cases and just hear them all at one time. So. But so yeah, we could be easily looking at a 3 or 4 year process before we get a final result.
Oh, besides the it would be a terrible decision if they forced this on us in so many ways and for so many reasons. But what are some of the other things if they were to win this, or some of the things they may attempt to do in the meantime that. People who might say, well, I don't care one way or the other, it's not going to affect me, blah, blah, blah. What are some of the other downsides do you see if this were to become law, especially concerning our kids?
Well, I mean, for one thing, when we get into the family life curriculum, which our state has standards for family life curriculum, there'll be nothing you could do to prevent your kids being taught that marriage is between two people who are in a loving, committed relationship, whether they're males or females or whatever the combination. So those of you who rely on the public schools to educate your kids when they start getting to the family life curriculum in middle school and early high school, they will understand that. It will make it much harder to defend ourselves when it comes to these issues of sexual orientation. One of the issues has been should the government prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression, and whether that should be applied to the private sector business. Well, once you've said gay marriage is acceptable, it's going to be hard to argue that you shouldn't at least prohibit a private employer from, quote, discriminating on the basis of sexual orientation. And most businesses I know don't discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation. They don't ask you when you come in, you know, hey, David Vance, who do you happen to have sex with? They just want to know, do you know how to do the job? And they hire you. And they want sex brought into the workplace. But what does happen, and this is where it gets really scary, is that you fire somebody, and the next thing you know, they're saying, well, actually, I'm gay, and that's why you did it. And then they threaten a lawsuit. Businesses, those kind of things happen. I mean, I hate to say it, but lawyers will file lawsuits if for no other reason sometimes than the settlement value, getting some money out of the employer, making a little money on the side and giving their client a little money. So those things will happen. And when that begins to happen, you're going to start seeing what's happening in other states where, let's say, you know, you've got David Fowler Photography and he photographs weddings. One of the things that he does is in comes a couple, they want to get married. And I say, look, I don't want to be a part of celebrating that kind of thing because it violates my religious convictions. And, you know, I'll come take pictures of your birthday, but not a wedding. Well, you're going to get sued.
Yeah. That's already happened in some states.
Oh, yeah, it happened in New Mexico. We had a baker up in the state of Washington who said, look, I'll make you birthday cakes, but I don't want to make a wedding cake. I can't in good conscience be a part of looking like I'm promoting, accepting, and a relationship that I think is unbiblical. Well, he's gone out of business.
Yeah.
Not only did they start telling people don't go to his business anymore, but they started threatening all of his vendors who either bought stuff from him or sold him flour and sugar, and he's out of business. So we need to realize it's time to wake
really
up.
Tolerant. They're really tolerant. It's a tolerant bunch we're dealing with.
Yeah, yeah. I'd hate to see it if they weren't.
Dave, now I know we're on a tight timeline because I know you've got another engagement after this, and I do appreciate you coming on. Any thoughts you want to leave everybody with?
Well, for one thing, just keep paying attention. We will certainly be putting updated information on our website, which is factn.org, and of course, you know, you get our information, so you will know if there's something else we should get on the horn and talk about. And I think just be praying for our nation over this issue, and praying for our state, praying for the judge that gets assigned the case, because I just can't imagine that God will take things like this lightly.
I don't think so either. Well, amen to that. We definitely need to pray about it, and we need to make sure our legislators hear from us on it. Well, Dave, good luck with the book. Look forward to reading
thank you.
It. And thanks for coming on, and you take care.
Okay, will do. Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
All right. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this message.
This is Dave from the Dave Matthews Band for Rad. When you go out and party, get drunk, then drive, you're not only loaded, you're a loaded weapon. When you celebrate, designate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives and so should you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Happy anniversary, honey.
Oh, you shouldn't have. Wait, is that a goat?
Goats are a great gift, but maybe not for her. Go to goatsfortheoldgoat.com to give a goat and end hunger in South Sudan.
So, do you like it?
Goatsfortheoldgoat.com.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And we've got Kurt on the line. How you doing tonight, Kurt?
I'm good, Dave. How about yourself?
Pretty good, pretty good. Any comments from our last guest?
Dave, you know that's a loaded gun. when you hand that off to me, and most of the comments that would pop into my mind readily are not fit to put into print, actually. If, I know we can't go down that path on here. But, yeah, I'm continually amazed at the reality of what we see happening here, that this minuscule percentage of the population of America is dictating policy to the rest of us. There is insanity in that. You know that.
Oh, yeah.
I know that. When is the rest of the public going to wake up and realize how insane it is? I don't know the answer to that question. But if they ever understand, think about this scenario. The gay and lesbian agenda, in reality, it is an agenda of genocide, like members of the species cannot reproduce. It takes male and female to reproduce in any area of life. Why would there be those people who want to promote something that can correctly be labeled genocide? Well, I think we know the answer to that question. You go back and read through those 40-some-odd declared goals of the Communist Party for the destruction, as it were, of the system of government that we've had in America for 235 years. It reads in there how a big part of their plan is to push the gay and lesbian agenda, which the end result of that is to destroy the nuclear family unit.
Yep.
So when you destroy the nuclear family unit, you break down the process of humanity. The whole thing breaks down. Most people know this inherently, but they don't stop to think about it. And there are a lot of people out there, and I know this from experience and talking to people around. I don't know what the numbers are. I hope it's not as bad as I think it is, and I fear that it's worse than maybe I think it is. I don't know. But they say, well, you know, it's no skin off my nose what they do in the privacy of your own bedroom or home or whatever. Well, you and I both know, as well as David Fowler and most people who think any at all, it is, you know, the end cost, the total end cost to this whole thing is going to be so great that everyone will pay the price tag for it. You and I have had conversations about this. I mean, you know, are we going to have an AIDS wing on the VA hospital or what?
Yeah, now that they've let them into the military and are promoting, you know, that's the other thing that really blows my mind. You know, having been in the military for so long and still dealing with them, they push safety. I mean, I call them the safety Nazis. All the things they worry about, you know, well, don't do this, you might get hurt this way, blah, 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 blah. They push health. They have a public health command. Now, how does the same institution that is so safety conscious and is pushing the whole healthy lifestyles thing, how do they reconcile saying, well, okay, you know, yeah, this homosexual issue in the military is not a problem. We just need to go ahead and do it and adapt it, and, you know, everybody needs to get over their objections to it, their moral objections to it. I'm like, wait a minute. You know, it doesn't even make sense, even if you set aside the morals, which I never do, but even if you set them aside, wait a minute, you're encouraging your force. You're saying it's okay if your force engages in this behavior, which we know is high-risk behavior. Well, on every other issue, they're trying to discourage. You know, when I first came in the Army, and granted, don't get me wrong, Joe still drinks, okay? Soldiers will always drink and party. There's no end in the sight on that one. But they were trying to get away from the glamorization of alcohol. They had just, after I'd been in for a few years, they really started the war on smoking. You know, at first it was, okay, if you smoke and your roommate doesn't smoke and he doesn't want you to smoke in a room, you can't smoke in a room. Well, then it was, you can't smoke in a common area. Now you can't smoke within 50 feet of a building on any military installation. So they go overboard on these other things, but they're going to adopt this unhealthy and expensive. You know, AIDS is not a cheap deal, and it's not just AIDS. You have all these other things that the homosexuals have problems with, and they're just encouraging it. It makes no sense what they say on one hand and what they do on the other. But, you know, here's the thing, too. They're not just wanting to keep it in the privacy of their home. It's not just a matter. They're not wanting to keep it in the bedroom. They're not wanting you to just tolerate them. They want to force you to accept them, and they want to for you not to be able to have an opinion any different than theirs. That is what they want. They want it to be forbidden, at least the activists. I'm not saying every homosexual, but the homosexual activists, they don't want us with traditional views, with Christian views, to be able to say anything negative about it. And that's their ultimate goal, is to shut everybody up and just do what they want and basically persecute those of us who disagree with them. Quite honestly, I won't go as far as saying that they would kill us the way the Muslims intend to, but in terms of liberty, in terms of our freedom, I put them in the same category. They would be just as tyrannical towards us as the Muslims. Maybe not as violent, but in terms of any kind of rights, they would strip them all if they could.
Oh, yeah.
That's my opinion anyway.
Yeah, I agree with you. And on the subject of violence, most everybody that's paid any attention at all knows that among the gay and lesbian community, the violence level is way, way up. And at this, I can hear the screaming now from the left and the gay and the lesbian who want to talk about the violence in everyday life, you know, among heterosexuals. Yes, there's violence. As long as there's been human beings on Earth, there's been violence. And as long as there are human beings in this realm, as where we exist now, there's going to be violence. But if you can, when you get an in-depth study and get the percentage figures, the violence percentage, the ratio goes way up in that community. And given the opportunity to inflict harm on someone else, if they get the opportunity, they will. I mean, there's no two ways about it. If they think they can get away with it, that's the key. There lies the key to a whole. A lot of these problems is people have gotten away with too much for too long. Now, what the answer is to stopping it immediately, I don't know, Dave.
Well, I don't know either, but people better wake up on this in Tennessee. And I hope, I just hope that, you know, I don't know what the convictions of our attorney general are. I'm not impressed with them overall. But I would hope that if he is not going to fight it, if he decides not to fight it, I hope that Lieutenant Governor Ramsey and Speaker Harwell find the best people to defend our state on this issue. Kurt, I got to take a real quick break. I got to do a live read, and then we can come right back to this topic. There comes a time when good things have to give way to great things. ConservativeNationMedia.com is growing like a Texas Longhorn, which is why Michael B. Smith now has his own show. Check out Soldier of Patriotism, Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com. But don't be worried. He's the same Michael B. you've come to know and love, and you'll hear even more great interviews and awesome conservative commentary from our very own main man, Michael B. Smith, on Soldier of Patriotism. Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. That is 718-305-7176. By the way, speaking of our attorney general, you know, the attorney general is supposed to be elected. And I read something today where the governor has issued an executive order basically calling for a commission to select the attorney general, even though he's supposed to be elected by the people. So, you know, just another example of how you don't have to look to D.C. to find chief executives who are ignoring the Constitution and issuing executive orders that they have no right to issue. And, I mean, it's a well-known fact. They've admitted that, yes, they're supposed to be elected, and we haven't elected them for 40 years, and we're not going to start electing them now. Now, people can go back and forth and disagree or agree on should they be elected. It's a moot point until the Constitution is changed. And the Constitution says they're supposed to be elected by the people, but that's not the way it's been done, and that's not the way they're doing it. And I guess the governor has put his official stamp on it that he's just going to basically do what he wants. So, you know, that's another thing, too. You got to wonder, some wimpy guy like our governor, no backbone, no very, very few apparent convictions. Okay, I'll just put it that way. I know they say he's a good Christian man. Maybe he is, but he doesn't seem to stand on principle much from where I stand. You know, I would think that if the governor put a lot of pressure on the attorney general to do the right thing in terms of defending this case when the time comes, that maybe he'll listen. I'm just curious to see if there's any statements that come out
from the governor's office, or, you know, obviously the attorney general will have to make a statement at some point in time, but I'm curious to see if we hear anything from our governor on this.
Yeah, that it'll be interesting to observe what happens. Dave, let's kind of link up in general the topic on which David Fowler was speaking here about the whole gay and lesbian issue, and he spoke briefly a moment ago about school curriculum and what the gay and lesbian agenda would do to school curriculum by promoting textbooks that teach our children that lifestyle is, quote, normal, acceptable, or whatever.
Right.
Now, the textbook content, I don't know if curriculum is exactly the right word to use on this issue or not, so let's talk about textbook content. As you know, that's become a hot issue it's a hot issue all over the country, but it's very hot here in Tennessee, and I think progress is being made. You know more of the people than I know that are active in this movement. I think you're friendly some more, I believe, as her name is going to be on next, right?
Right, and she is our next guest. And hey, Kurt, I think I know where you're going with this. Let me get in our – let me go ahead and take our 1945 break at 1946, and
sure,
we come right back. We come back, okay. We'll have a little bit of time to talk before she gets on. Don't go away. We'll be right back on Inside Tennessee.
Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change?
So I'm a dog, and I just got adopted by this new human guy, and I'm starting to wonder how he got along without me. I mean, okay, something as simple as walking around the block. He's got this leash thing, and he puts me on one end and him on the other, and I'm just taking him around. I think he's afraid of getting lost. Without that leash and me guiding him along, I don't think he'd find his way back home. But it's kind of cute.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Hey, sweetie. What's going on?
Well, honey, I have some news.
Okay. What?
All that training paid off. I got the job.
Oh, I knew you would get it. So when do you start?
When you donate stuff to Goodwill, you help provide job training for people right here in your community. Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we have Kurt on the line. We're getting into a discussion about textbooks a little bit before our expert gets on with us. Lisa Moore will be with us here in a few minutes. But Kurt, I know this past week you had a speaker come to your GOP meeting in Henry County, if I'm not mistaken, on this issue. You want to fill us in on that a little bit?
Yeah, certainly will, Dave. Yeah, and you hit it right on. It was the GOP meeting, and we did have a speaker. Your friend and mine, Lori Day, from over McEwen, was here. And as always, she did a bang-up job in her presentation over here. And the first thing, this is just an observation from my part. We had people who came to that meeting that night specifically for the purpose of hearing what was going to be said. There was reactions that went around to an email that someone deeply involved in the local school system here saw it and reacted to it and came with, I'm not certain how many of the people that came in that I didn't personally know were of that. I did know at least two of them very well.
We're talking teachers and administrators, school administrators?
Yes, people from the school, school administrators. And I can tell you with pretty much certainty that, that some people left that meeting the last Thursday night with their undies and a wad.
I guess we can say that on the radio.
I already did, so.
Yeah.
But on a serious note, I'm glad for that. I'm glad, first of all, that they had an opportunity to hear what was said. And I have a connection there in this by which eventually I will be able to determine exactly or pretty close to what their own personal reactions were to this. It'll take me a little time to kind of sift through it and find out, but I'm very curious to see. There were other people at that meeting who had not been to a GOP meeting. There were some people there who had never seen a Tea Party meeting either. People that I was glad to see there, I was glad to see them get active and come out. And I'll tell you this, I don't know what kind of a rating to put on this. If I were going to give it a 1 to 10, I wouldn't know where to start to number it about what is happening in this area right now. But I believe I see something moving in a way that has not moved before. There are vibrations within the church family where I attend church that I've never seen before. There are people speaking up, speaking out, conferencing with one another, and frankly coming to me and asking questions and asking for information. They want to know, where can I find this? Where can I find that?
On this issue and specifically or different issues?
On this issue, the focus right now seems to be the most of the activity that I'm speaking of is focused on the school textbook issue, which is, of course, centered around the concept of Common Core.
Right.
Common Core, you know, there's been a Common Core for a long time. It just wasn't made as much of a fuss of as it is now. They built that machine and slid it quietly into place. It's like a Trojan horse that they built and left outside the gate. And we said, oh, look, a horse, and went on our way. But people are starting to pay attention. People are angry. I know grandmothers that are angry. Angry because their grandchildren are being force-fed stuff at school that our Tennessee, our United States of America children, there is no right. There is no way that they are supposed to be able to be indoctrinated. And indoctrination,
yeah, exactly.
Indoctrination is the only word that you can put on it. That's what is happening.
Yep.
And we are to the point now that if we allow one more generation of young people to become indoctrinated as those behind them have, that may be the last generation prior to absolute, just total collapse and failure. So this is one of the most important battles. It's sometimes one hardly knows which way to shoot. As you imagine yourself standing outside, and you're under attack from all directions, and you only have so many shots to fire, and you know, which way do I shoot this time? It's
right.
Almost. But this issue is one that I think deserves very, very high billing. I think people are starting to pay attention now. I know that people are asking me questions that I've never been asked them before. These people have never seemed to be really interested before.
Maybe that's a good thing. I mean, hopefully they're waking up.
Yeah.
Hopefully they're finally waking up. I know you've been at this going on 5 years. And, you know, it's not like we just woke up in 2008 or 2009 and realized that there was a lot of bad things going on in our schools. There's been propaganda even at the high school and junior high level for years, but it's getting worse.
Yeah.
And part of it is people are waking up to it and just finding out, wow, I didn't know they'd been doing that all these years. And now they're doing even worse things in terms of, you know, they're pushing the gay agenda, they're pushing the radical environmental agenda, they're pushing the pro-Islamic, anti-Christian, anti-American agenda. They've always pushed anti-Christian and anti-American stuff for, you know, quite a while now, unfortunately. But yeah, it seems like it's getting worse. Got another caller on the line here. If you'll hold up, we'll take another call. Caller, you have a question or a comment?
Yeah, hi, Dave. It's Lisa. I was just hanging on until you were ready for me.
I'm sorry. I was looking at a different number, but we'll be with you in just a minute. I appreciate that.
All right.
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Dave?
You have a question or a
Dave?
Comment? Hey, how we doing?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, this is a comment. This is John from Union City. I wanted, if I may, take time. I know your Kurt was talking about people waking up and starting to pay attention, and you know, certainly one of those that I think has their finger on the pulse right now is Ted Cruz, and many people are beginning to become aware of his story, which, of course, a big part of that is his father, Rafael Cruz, who is a pastor. And one of the messages that Rafael Cruz is putting out is that our pastors need to become more active, and they need to become more involved and have an understanding of the seriousness of a lot of the issues that we're facing. But the reason I bring him up is to your listeners, there'll be an opportunity to see him and even meet him in person. The Obion County Republican Party is bringing him in from Fort Worth for their Reagan Day dinner, which is November the 9th. There's a dinner involved. The tickets are $50, and you can get those by calling this number, 731-885-8950. And I hope some of your listeners will take that opportunity to go and listen to him. I've heard him speak on Glenn Beck's program, and I know a number of other people have heard him, and he's quite – even Rush the other day plugged him as an excellent speaker. So hopefully I just wanted to put that out there, and I hope some of your listeners will follow up on that.
Now, they have to get their tickets by the 4th, and you're not going to sell any tickets at the door, correct?
That's correct. They have to call because we've got to give the caterer a number by the 1st of next week, which is, I think, the 4th is Monday. So, yes, so if they'll call that number, 731-885-8950. I have another number that's 731-885-8950. 8955. Either
now,
of those
$50.
Numbers, and it is $50 per plate. And if you spend an extra $100, which is $150 total, then there is an event beforehand where Rafael is going to meet with a number of the area pastors. Importantly, one of the things I left out of this whole equation, this thing's going to be held at, which is opening in Obion County this Friday, which is an $80 million investment by a local businessman who has built this education and entertainment center that is simply, it's unique in all the world. And the Reagan Day dinner is going to be in the Dinosaur Hall of Discovery Park, and in the Tennessee room of this park beforehand, those that want to pay an extra $100 will have a chance to meet Rafael Cruz in person as he meets with these area pastors. And I'll tell you how sincere a guy this is. When he came, he didn't want anything didn't ask for any money. He just said, well, you guys figure out how to get me there and if I can fit it into my schedule. But he insisted on finding a church on Sunday that he could address. And so we've
great.
Done that. Yeah.
Well, now, what time does it start? What time does the event start?
Let's see. The private reception is at 5:30, and it's from 5:30 to 6:15, and the dinner starts at 6:30.
Okay. Well, John, I appreciate you calling in. I had it on my list to do if nobody called, but I'm glad you were able to call in, and I appreciate it. And I want to get with you offline a little later on about this. But, hey, thanks for informing us, and we've got to go to a break. Don't go away. We'll be right back with Lisa Moore. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. Take care.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
My name is Dale Pazinski. I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live united. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on the very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it. That's what living united feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
There's no time to kill between the cradle and the grave. Father, time still takes a toll on every man.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And we are going to be talking with Lisa Moore here in just a second. Lisa, are you with us?
Yeah, Dave, I'm here. How are you?
And Lisa, I'm doing fine. How about you?
Good. I'm terrific. Thanks.
Appreciate you coming on the show. And you are with Act for America, the Rutherford County chapter, and you are one of the Tennessee Textbook Warriors.
That's right. I am indeed.
When did your interest in this issue start? I mean, what got you into this?
Well, Dave, it really, I guess if you go all the way back to the beginning, it really started for me several years ago when everything started here in Murfreesboro regarding the mosque. And I started doing a lot of research. Oh, hold on a minute. Sorry. Sorry, I was having some technical problems with my phone there. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I've got you.
Okay. Going back several years, and I really just started kind of diving in and doing some research and educating myself on the world of Islam, if you will, and started becoming concerned about the things that I was hearing, especially through the Act for America group, about the things that were happening to our kids' education and the indoctrination that was finding itself into the way of our schools. And I had read all the reports, and I was concerned and pretty well educated at that point, especially about political Islam. And my son, who was a sixth grader last year, so it's been about a year ago, walked in one day after school. It was back in early, I guess, September last year, with his world history textbook. And I think I was working or out of the house at the time, and he handed the textbook to his dad and said, Dad, I think you need to take a look at this textbook. And he opened it up to the section on Islam and said, I think we need to talk to Mom about this. And you have to understand, aside from being extremely bright, my 12-year-old is also probably more educated about the subject of Islam than most grown-ups that we know. So anyway, so they brought it to me, opened it up, and it was like there it was staring me in the face. And so it wasn't just something that I was reading about anymore. It was right there in front of me. It was in my son's classroom, and it was unbelievable in terms of the things that I started finding. With our dollars, absolutely.
With your tax dollars. Yep.
Absolutely.
Yep.
So that's really what got me started on the whole focusing on the textbooks and the indoctrination of our children that's going on.
So you went to the school board, and they said what?
We did indeed. Well, actually, before we even went to the school board, Dave, we spent quite a bit of time really delving into the book. We had several people from our group here that were reading it with me, and we decided that we wanted to call on our friend Dr. Bill Warner. And Bill was gracious enough to take the textbook and review it and give us his own report on it, which was, of course, beautifully executed, as everything he does. And we
yeah.
took the report, actually, and we initially reached out to the school board, to the director of schools and all of the school board members before we even went to a board meeting. We reached out to them personally. We sent them a copy of Dr. Warner's report, very respectfully said, hey, we're extremely concerned about this textbook. We'd like to talk to you about it. Please see the report attached. And we even had a couple of our members that went to visit some of the school board members and talk to them. And there was this dialogue, of course, that kind of bounced back and forth with people saying, oh, yeah, well, we're concerned too, but nothing ever came of it. And so we finally decided early last spring that we needed to go in front of them at a formal board meeting, which we did in March of last year. And it was an interesting board meeting. Initially, actually, I had signed up to speak for 15 minutes. This was our school board meeting here in Rutherford County. They had a clause in their sign-up form that said if you represented a large group that you could speak for 15 minutes as opposed to the normal three that they limit you to. And so I signed up for 15 minutes. They agreed to it, or the secretary did, and when I got into the boardroom, we were about a half an hour early, gentleman came up to me and didn't even introduce himself, leaned over and said, are you Ms. Moore? I said, yes. And he said, well, I just need to tell you that we can't give you 15 minutes to speak. The limit is three. And so I looked at him, and I reached out my hand, and I said, hi, I'm Lisa Moore, and who are you? And he said, well, my name is Jeff Reed. And I said, oh, you're the school attorney, aren't you? And he said, yes. And I said, well, you probably should be aware of what's posted on your website. And I gave him a copy of the 15-minute form, which he knew absolutely nothing about. Well, anyway, long story short, even before that meeting started that night, the attorney reapproached me twice. They called another attorney over there, and I just stood my ground and said, look, it says it here. I've signed up for it. You know, you don't have folks that are scheduled to speak over the allotted 30 minutes anyway. And just stuck to my guns until they finally backed down. So it was not off to
good
a real pretty start there initially. You know, there was not, without question, they were trying to intimidate me. They knew that I was coming. They knew that I was coming with the textbook, because when all the board members paraded out that night, they all sat down at their seats and they had a copy of, guess what, the textbook in front of them. So I think they thought that they were prepared for me with their responses and their canned responses, but what they weren't aware of was that when I walked into that board meeting that night, not only did I have the concerns and the report about the textbook and the fact that we'd spent months trying to get their attention and they'd never responded, but I also had seven pages of handouts that my son's teacher had used in his class during the week of world religion studies that he had brought home a couple months after the textbook, and they were even, Dave, they were even more atrocious than the textbook. There were seven handouts. Four of them were about Islam and Muhammad. Two of them, and I think this is what will get people's attention more than anything when they hear the numbers, four pages about Islam. Two of those four pages were nothing about were about nothing but Muhammad and his life, and it was a bunch of whitewash, garbage. And then the other, there were two handouts on Christianity and one on Judaism. They had a handout that my son had to cut out and paste the pillars, the five pillars of Islam, and the matching pieces that went with them. I mean, it was pure out-and-out indoctrination, and I was even more alarmed by those than the textbook. So the school board wasn't aware that I was coming in with those handouts, so kind of threw them for a bit of a loop. And so anyway, we got through. They talked a good game, said they would look into it, et cetera, et cetera. And, of course, they all professed surprise about it when we'd been sending them these emails and making these visits for a couple of months. And for a long time, I didn't hear anything back from them. I did get a call back from the director of schools the next day. He assured me he was going to put their curriculum director on it and that they would get back with me. This was right before spring break. And they never did get back with me. So I finally had to send a certified letter, and I still got no response. So what actually wound up happening was I went on Michael DiGiorno's show one morning to talk about it, and lo and behold, the next day I got a phone call from the director of school secretary asking me to come in and schedule a meeting with him. So
wow.
we did finally talk to them. They did actually agree to do something about the handouts. They claimed it was that they'd looked into it and it was an isolated incident. My son actually had a very nice teacher. She's a sweet young lady, but if you listen, this is concerning in and of itself. She did not put those handouts in the classroom deliberately with any ill intent. We're talking total, complete naivete. She had gone online and researched Islam and pulled these handouts off of some obscure homeschool mom's website in Michigan or somewhere. And as we dove into it further, we found that they originated from a website in Great Britain,
wow.
Which, and we all know what's going on in Great Britain right now in terms of
what's happening.
Yeah,
they're further down the road.
By a few years, it's pretty scary. So anyway, that's kind of what happened with the local school board here. They basically, at the end of the day, though, came back to us and said, nope, we're not going to take the textbook out. That's too expensive, too much trouble. We don't think it's that bad. Those were the kind of responses we got. And they kept pushing us to direct our attention to the state. And one of their excuses was, look, the new social studies books are going to be up for bid this next year. You guys just need to get involved in the review process of those so you can address it before the new books get into the system. So
if something bad gets in the system, you can't do anything about it. You got to stick with it because it's already there.
Well, at least according to the Rutherford County School Board. And Williamson County, too, because, as you know, they dealt with their own set of problems with another textbook, the Cultural Landscape, a Pearson book that had some extremely anti-Semitic material in it.
All right. Lisa, I got to jump in here real quick. I got to do a real quick live read, and we'll get right back to you.
Okay.
Any police officer will tell you that Friday nights on the beat can get fairly hectic. And now Friday nights on conservativenationmedia.com will be even more interesting. We're proud to welcome retired police officer Kathy Henners to Fridays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central with daily roll call. Kathy served her community in New York State for years, and now she serves America by keeping a watchful eye on the Muslim Brotherhood and any other troublemakers unlucky enough to cross her path. So don't miss daily roll call with Kathy Henners, Fridays at 8 Eastern, 7 Central, on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we are talking to Lisa Moore from Act for America Rutherford County Chapter on the issue of textbooks. And Lisa, you were one of Kathy's first guests last Friday.
I was, and that was truly a privilege. So Kathy has, I've learned a lot from Kathy over the last year or so since we first met. And actually, Kathy and I originally met over my son's textbook. We attended the Act for America 912 memorial event that they did last year back in 2012, and Kathy was one of the keynote speakers, and we took our son with us. And so I got to introduce him to her, and that she was really kind of pivotal in encouraging me to push this textbook issue further.
Oh, yeah, she's a good one. She is a good
one.
She's
awesome.
Glad she's on our side.
Absolutely.
Now, with the textbooks, okay, they didn't have any, the school board didn't really seem to have a whole lot of concern. I mean, for instance, the teacher, you said she was naive. But even as a teacher, you would think, okay, wait a minute, I'm presenting something here with 4 pages on one religion, 2 pages on another religion, which happens to be the religion of the majority of the people in our country, and 1 page on Judaism. Just in content quantity alone, you would have thought that would have raised a red flag maybe?
Yeah, you would have. And what was even more concerning was when we met with the director of schools and the director of curriculum after they'd done their investigation, they indicated that this, of course, as I told you, was an isolated incident. I don't believe that it was. And, yeah, you're absolutely right. And one of the things that they shared with us, because my response back to them was, wait a minute, are you telling me that a teacher can go out to any website, pull materials of a subject that they obviously know nothing about, and present it to their classrooms as factual history? And their response was basically, well, yeah, we have to trust our teachers. I'm like, well, you've got a problem. And at that point, of course, they assured me that they were meeting with all the middle school principals and the social studies teachers to ensure that it didn't happen again. So
has it happened again?
Not that we're aware of, at least not in Rutherford County, but, you know, it's a big school system. A lot of schools, a lot of kids out there, so it's really hard to say. But it was pretty apparent from what happened that they don't have any control over it. And it doesn't seem like they really care to control it either, and that's sad. We put them in those positions to take care of and protect our kids and what they're learning in the classroom.
Now, even though you went to them individually ahead of time, they still tried to make it sound as if you blindsided them. They were a little upset with the way they portrayed their interaction with you.
Yeah, you know, and that's just really sad, Dave, because to me, the way this all played itself out with the attorneys harassing me before the meeting, and then after the meeting was over, and even especially after I went on the air about it, there was a lot of whining, quite frankly, from several of the board members about how inappropriate and ugly we had been. Unfortunately, at the end of that first board meeting, somebody got up and said something they shouldn't have. We didn't even know who the person was, but, of course, we got blamed for it.
Got the blame for it, yeah, right.
They're all whining about how they've been offended or we're not having the appropriate respect for them. And it's like, wait a minute, but I never heard an apology from your attorney about the way I was basically harassed before your meeting. So, yeah, it's just a lot of finger-pointing and a lot of whiny. You know, I think they think that they're there to do what they want to do, and that they're not working at our privilege and our good humor and our tax dollars like they really are.
Right.
So I think they forget that they're replaceable.
Yeah, now that's the thing, too. When is the other parents? Were there a lot of people there, or was it just you and a few others that
now
came to these meetings?
Yeah, at that first board meeting back last March, we probably had, I would guess, about 60 or 70 people there. And, most of the meetings, especially if we're speaking or presenting specifically about something along the lines of the textbooks or the curriculum, we usually have a fair number of people show up for the meeting. So we definitely have some concerned parents and grandparents here in Rutherford County about what's going on with the textbooks and the curriculum.
Have you swayed any of the teachers or administrators, even if they don't want to come out publicly and side with you?
You know, we haven't yet, Dave. That's an area where we really, very frankly, because we've been so busy having to continuously fight this battle with the textbooks at the local and the state level with the politicians, we haven't really had an opportunity to reach out to the teachers, and that is one of the things that we've got on the drawing board. But, you know, Dave, it's a lot like the Common Core, too. I think the majority of these teachers, and the majority of them, I truly believe, got into teaching for the right reasons. Their hearts are in the right place, and we all need to have a lot of empathy for them right now because they are in a tough spot with this Common Core and everything else that's going on. But very honestly, I think the majority of them are afraid to speak or to speak out because essentially then what they're doing is they're speaking out against their administrations, and their jobs are tenuous enough now as it is with all of the things that Common Core is bringing in to basically replace them with computers and online tools is what we envision coming down the road. And then, of course, we really won't know what our kids are being taught.
Right. Now, my understanding, because I've talked to my school board in the past about different textbook issues, and, you know, from what you've told me, your school board told you, well, you know, you really need to take it up to state. There's nothing we can do about it, and we don't think it's that bad anyway. But as I understand it, you know, there is a list that school districts can choose from. And I think, is there not a process where if there is something that's not on the list, it can be still be approved and allowed in? Or is there a process for that?
Dave, there is. And actually, that's one of the things that our school board didn't even seem to be aware of when we first went to them with this textbook, and we had already researched it, done our homework, and there is indeed a process for which the local school district has, well, first of all, they get the list of books that the state has approved and said, here are the approved books, pick what you want, you know, for your American history class, for your world history class, for your psychology class. And the school board has the right, if they don't like any of the choices that they're given, they can file a waiver with the school system or with the state and request to go find their own textbook. Now, they've continued for 6 months to pretend like they don't understand that statute, and even up to this last school board meeting where we went after the state meeting and said, okay, they're passing the buck back down to you guys, and that's, I guess, a little bit of a later story. Have to catch people up on that. But they're still saying, well, we're going to have our attorney look into it. We'll have him research it. And we're like, you don't need to research it. We've given you the statute. You know what the rules are. And everyone at the state, up to the Department of Education commissioner, has said to us, they have that right and know they're not going to be penalized for requesting to find their own books. They just don't want to do it, Dave.
Now, so it doesn't cost them anything additional if they find another book that they want to use?
No. And as a matter of fact, if anything, I think, and what happened with this whole state process, the books that they're getting presented with that we found that are so bad, these new social studies books, you can tell as you look down the list of them, they're all major big-name publishers. You know, they're the Pearsons, they're the Bedford, Freeman & Worst, they're the McGraw-Hills. And what happened in this process was the smaller mom-and-pop, well, I don't want to say mom-and-pop, but, you know, the smaller, maybe privately held publishers, which, of course, are going to be the ones that are more likely to have decent textbooks in terms of no bias,
right,
were kind of cut out of the process because of all these crazy things that went on with the state process that basically didn't let them play in the game because they couldn't afford to. And so my feelings or thoughts are there are smaller publishers out there that could produce or already have, say, an American history book that's more suitable, that those school boards are probably, if they would make their minds up that they're going to do it and put the work into it, I think there's actually a lot of money to be saved there, that they're not paying all these millions to the Pearsons.
Oh, yeah.
Just because it's a, okay, we're going to lay down and take it because that's what – you know, that's what we got to do, and that's the way it's always been done.
And you said if they can't afford, is there a bond fee or something that these publishers have to pay in order to pay to play? Is that the deal?
Exactly, there is. And there were some real timeline issues with some of these smaller publishers. What happened, the textbooks that are submitted for the state's review are required to meet the state standards. The state standards are, you know, a list of things that, you know, this is what the kids have to know, this is what they've got to have to be able to pass all their tests, et cetera. And the state board, the textbook commission, reviews those books to make sure that they meet the state standards. Well, the state standards were over 6 months late being published. They kept putting it off. They kept delaying and delaying and delaying. So what happened was these publishers were backed into a corner with the timeline that they had to actually jump and produce the books that finally met the state standards after they finally got them. And in addition to that, the publishers were required to post, I believe it was $1,000, I think it may have started out at $1,500, but I know it was at least $1,000 bond for every textbook that they submitted.
For every textbook? Hello? Lisa? Okay, Lisa, are you with me? Let me see if I can hear Kurt. Kurt, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, I lost Lisa.
Yeah.
I just wanted to do a little check there. Let me go back and see if I can pick her back up again.
Okay.
All right. Okay, well, she dropped off. Hopefully she'll call back here in just a second. Everything was rolling right along, and we lost her. Actually, I'm going to go ahead and go to a – oh, here she is. All right. Lisa, are you with us?
Dave, I'm so sorry. I was just talking away, and apparently there was no one there, so I apologize.
Well, we were, yeah, I don't know. The last thing I heard was you were talking about the textbook commission was late getting the standards out, and each, the companies had to post a bond for $1,000 to $1,500 per book.
Right.
Okay, now, so, you mean each different type of book? Or you mean
exactly.
Each? Okay, okay.
Yeah.
And, of course, so, the short time span makes it hard for a small company because they're not going to be able to crank up production that quick.
Exactly. That just increased their cost probably tenfold, that they had to, you know, get these things out at the last minute. And the bigger publishers, the Pearsons, it's like, oh, no big deal. But for some of the smaller publishers, it was impossible.
Right. Okay. So, now, you did mention a minute ago that you can use an alternate. Oh, by the way, before I forget, was 2012, was that a, you mentioned the standards. How often do they revise the standards for their textbooks?
You know, I think they have to be revised before the next textbook reviewing period comes out. So once the textbooks are selected and go into the classrooms, they're there for 6 years. So I'm guessing it's on a six-year period then, at least as far as the textbooks meeting the standards.
Okay. Now, have you had a chance to look at the standards, the school's textbook standards?
Yeah. Yeah, I've looked at the social studies standards.
Are they generic or are they good, bad, or ugly?
They're generic and they're ugly. You know, again, when you look through, again, the whole world history timelining, you see things in the standards that, again, are the kids having to identify the five pillars of Islam, but really not identify anything at all about Christianity. Yeah, the standards speak volume to the entire indoctrination process as well, Dave. Absolutely.
Okay. Okay. Well, now, the textbook commission is... Have they finished for the year then?
They have, I guess, apparently. What had happened, do you want me to go into the detail on that as far as the state commission and what they did?
Yeah, originally, I guess they decided to hold up approving the standards, correct? Or approving the textbooks?
They did, and if I could back up just a little bit further and just kind of fill you in on the background, they actually started meeting back in the summer before the standards had even been approved, and we actually went to their meeting back in June, and it was really interesting. We received a very nice welcome. They were surprised to see us there. They said that this was really the first time that they had ever had any public show up at one of their meetings. And so we shared with all these, and this was before this list of textbooks had even come out. So all we were doing was sharing with them the concerns that we'd already found in the schools and our interest in helping them find good textbooks. And they were very responsive, and it was a really good dialogue, you know, an interchange, to coin the favorite phrase these days, dialogue. And so the next meeting after that was the one where they actually the publishers came in. After the teacher, there's a commission, but then the commission has a team of textbook reviewers that's made up of teachers. They have certain criteria that they have to meet that spend months, a couple months, reviewing these textbooks. But turns out all those teachers are doing is reviewing them to see if they met the standards. So there's no reviewer consideration at all for bias, for content. Simply, do they meet the standards? And after the teachers got done with their reviews, they had what they called a publisher hearing, which the commission held a hearing at which the publishers came in and spoke to the concerns that the teachers had and how they were going to clean the books up. Now, during that timeline or the process when the teachers were reviewing, we were reviewing also. We found out that they did have a window of time. It was very, very short, that the public could access these textbooks. Now, it wasn't fair. They didn't make it easy for us to access them. We had to go to the libraries, the university libraries. We had to only go there the hours that they were open in that curriculum, and it took weeks of fighting battles and even calling one of our senators' offices to finally get them to release some of the passwords so we could at least review some of the books online. We couldn't make copies. We couldn't scan. Yeah, it was ridiculous. They were trying, I think, not to allow us as best they could. But we prevailed. We put together a website. We had a tremendous team of people that came together from across the state. We had over 100 reviewers working on these books. And we submitted probably well over 100 formal concerns, if you will, forms to the state commission about the books and what we'd found in them. So the publishers also had access to that information before the publisher hearing. So in other words, they had seen and heard all the teachers' responses, which, by the way, Dave, nothing about the kind of concerns we found. All the teachers seemed to be concerned about was, oh, they couldn't get a link to the website, or their material wasn't user-friendly enough, and just silly stuff.
All right. I'm going to have to break in here real quick.
Sure.
I'm going to take, I guess, a hard break, but we'll be right back. Don't go away. We're talking to Lisa Moore on Inside Tennessee. Be right back.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict. The war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to stand for America now.
Happy anniversary, honey.
Oh, you shouldn't have. Wait, is that a goat?
Goats are a great gift, but maybe not for her. Go to goatsfortheoldgoat.com to give a goat and end hunger in South Sudan.
So, do you like it?
Goatsfortheoldgoat.com.
Hello. Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Sorry for that technical glitch there. We are talking to Lisa Moore. Lisa, can you hear me?
Yes, I'm still here, Dave.
Okay. Sorry about that. I had a little technical issue. Anyway, we were talking about the text of the commission right before we left. And you were talking about the books. And you mentioned the teachers' reviews. The teachers really you know, their concern of anything was, okay, it wasn't user-friendly, or they were just looking to see if it met the standards, but they didn't raise any objections on the content, correct?
Right. Well, and interestingly enough, Dave, and I'm glad you brought that up, because out of all the teacher reviews, and we did actually have access to be able to view those before we went into the publisher hearings, there was one book, or one, I guess I should say, it would be more called, a probably referred to as a weekly reader, that was a third grade proposed textbook. It was going to be kind of like in a little newspaper form, that they took issue with because they felt like it was too biased as far as Christianity, and it had too much information about the golden rule in there.
You can't have that.
So, oh, no, no, no. But we've got all these 5th grade through 12th grade books, history books, that are full, absolutely packed, jam-packed full of Islamic indoctrination, of socialist agenda, you know, communist agenda kind of things in our history, in our U.S. history books, leaving out, you know, the good things that conservatives have accomplished along the way. But none of that got picked up on by the teachers. But they pulled out that one third grade reader because it was too biased towards Christianity.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, that's really sad. You know, here in Tennessee, in the middle of, you know, Rutherford County is roughly the middle of the state. You know, we're in the Bible Belt. And they would be offended because something seemed to be too pro-Christian. But you got 4 pages promoting Islam, and they don't say a word.
Oh, that was just the handouts. The number, the page count in the books as far as the information about Islam versus Christianity and Judaism, especially in these new books, and I could quote you some statistics if you'd like. Again, I think this is, if this doesn't get someone's attention, I don't know what would. Dave, but and I'll get back to the commission, I promise. But I'm just looking at some of the reports that I did here, and one of the history books, it was actually another Pearson book, these are lovely folks that are apparently publishing our children's textbooks, called My World History and Geography, Early Civilization Through the Renaissance. I love doing, you know, comparisons. And in this book, there was an entire unit on Islam. There was a chapter... 5 chapters on Islam. Now, the number of units on Christianity, 0. Judaism, 0. Number of chapters on Christianity, there were 2 partial chapters that were mixed with other subjects. And I did a word count on the number of references this book had to Muslims. It was 219. The number of references to Christians was 42. The number of references to Jews was 26. The number of references to Muhammad was 180, and the number of references to Jesus was 102. Now, let that sink in. But the teachers had nothing to say about that.
Well, you know, that's an indictment on our teachers. You know, here's the thing. And I've got a good friend who's a teacher. He happens to be a conservative, one of the few conservative teachers. And, you know, I remember some of my teachers from high school, and I thought a lot of some of them. But I'm going to tell you what. You know, it's not really all that surprising when you consider where do they get their degrees from. You know, we're talking about the high schools now, but the colleges have been way left for years. So it's really not surprising. It's disgusting, but not surprising. Lisa, we got a caller on the line here. We're going to take either a question or a comment, and we'll get back to the commission.
Okay.
Okay. If it'll pop up. Caller, you have a question or a comment?
Yeah, I do, Dave. I helped do a little review on this textbook thing this year. And to support what Lisa's saying about the indoctrination of Islam into these history books, I'd like to share one of those indoctrination statements with her, okay?
Sure.
Lisa.
Go ahead.
Absolutely.
Hey, Lisa, this is Bob Milner. I did a little review on these textbooks, too, and I'd like to share one of the comments that was made here in the book I reviewed, okay?
Okay, Bob, you did a lot of review, and we appreciated all your efforts. Thank you.
Yeah, the book I reviewed was Ancient World History, Patterns of Interaction. It was published by Houghton, Mifflin, and Harcourt, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And let me get down here to how it had a whole section on Islam, about 26 pages worth of it, okay? and to finalize it and end that section, not part of the text, but in a little inset on the side of the page. It finished with this here, okay? Let me read this to you. It said, one should read histories, study biographies, and the experiences of nations. And by doing this, it would be as though in his short lifespan, that's the student, he lived contemporaneously with the peoples of the past, was on intimate terms with them, and knew the good and the bad among them. You should model your conduct on that of the early Muslims. Therefore, read the biography of the Prophet, Muhammad, study his deeds and concerns, follow in his footsteps, and try your utmost to imitate him. Now, to me, that is indoctrination is to the nth degree right there of indoctrination into being a Muslim. And that's what our students are now studying, and I certainly hope we go to the parents and the parents can intervene with their students and their children and prepare them for these type things and set them straight about what is right and what is wrong about Muslims. Thank you.
Hey, Bob,
absolutely right.
I've got to say something on that, Bob. That that needs to be sent out to every legislator, every representative, every senator. The governor needs to see it. The textbook commission, every elected official in our state needs to see that. All the school board members. That's just if you can't deny that, that's blatant propaganda.
It's right there.
That's
pure indoctrination. There's no history teaching about that.
Right. You're exactly right. You know what is so sad, and Dave, you're exactly right. They do need to, and if I could, this is a real good opportunity, if you don't mind, for me to plug real quickly to let your listeners know that we do have some legislators that are paying attention. We have some wonderful conservative legislators in this area, and Senator Dolores Gresham has called for a special hearing about these textbooks and about the whole textbook process. Next Monday and Tuesday, 1 o'clock on Monday, starting at 9 o'clock on Tuesday morning, several of us will be giving testimony about these textbooks. And, Bob, yeah, I need you to send me that particular section.
Let me send you
one.
I'll send you this write-up I did about it and the page number and everything. It's the bottom of my write-up on it, okay? What is your email address?
Well, I tell you what, you can email me through our it's Rutherford County Act, ACT, at gmail.com.
Rutherford County Act.
Right.
Email.com.
Yeah. And you know what's so sad about that, too? If they had one of those side notes about patterning your life after Jesus, they
ACLU would be jumping up and down.
Oh, yeah. They would have been up in arms, and trust me, they would have gotten their lawyers to get that book thrown out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sad.
Well, Bob, thank you for that information. And
you definitely need to get with her.
Yeah, they need to hear that at the commission meeting. Or at the committee meeting. They definitely need to hear that one. Hey, I've got to break in here real quick. I've got to do one last live read for the evening. So if you'll just stand by. There can be nothing more outrageous to an American than the idea of an innocent person being wrongly convicted for a crime they didn't commit. But as they say, sunshine is the best disinfectant. We're proud to welcome A Just Cause with Sam Thurman and Cliff Stewart to Tuesday nights on conservativenationmedia.com. Sam and Cliff take a hard look at what happens when the wheels of justice trample the rights of innocent Americans. These are real cases of real people who are actually innocent, but who were wrongly convicted. Join us for A Just Cause, Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Phone number is 718-305-7176, and we're talking to Lisa Moore from the Act for America Rutherford County chapter about the textbook issue. And Lisa, I'll turn it back over to you to get us back on track.
Ah, okay. I appreciated Bob's input. Yeah, I mean, we had folks like Bob from across the state. We had one of the things I like to emphasize, too, is that we had people, Dave, reviewing these books from our group that, and I'll just give you a real quick example. We had two PhDs in our group. We had probably at least a half a dozen that had master's degrees. Most of our group were college educated. We also had a constitutional law attorney that was in our group reviewing books, and he's also an expert in American history. We had Bill Warner reviewing these books. So it wasn't like we had some ragtag band of, you know, upset radical right parents that just wanted to cause a fuss.
We were rightfully upset parents is what they were.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, what happened with the commission process from there? Yeah, the teachers just reviewed them for standards. They got the list of books. I think they passed all of them along. And the next step in the process was for the commission to hold a hearing to vote whether or not to approve the proposed list of books. And we went to that meeting as well. We made, of course, public comment at the beginning. There were about five of us that spoke. We had a couple of folks that spoke to that commission so passionately with so much detail and information about the just stuff that was in these books. I can't come up with the words to describe it right now. And made an impassioned plea to them that they needed to at least freeze the process until it could be looked at further. And when the director of the commission or the chairman of the commission called for a vote, or called for a motion to approve the list of textbooks, there was total, complete silence. It was the most beautiful silence I've ever heard. No one, not a one of those commissioners, would even make a motion to approve the books. And you could see people getting really uncomfortable up there at the front of the room, especially the state director of curriculum. That's another story. They called for another motion. Another very painful few seconds, and they refused to approve the list of books. I mean, we were ecstatic. It was a huge win. It sent a tremendous message out that these commissioners truly did hear what we were saying. And there were a couple of publishers in the room that you could tell were none too happy. The guy from Pearson shows up for every meeting, and his books are the most offensive and atrocious of all of them. And it was awesome. But we knew that we were going to be in for more of a battle because we knew the moment they walked out of that room that they were going to start getting hit with pressure from the powers to be and probably from the big money machines of the publishers. And so they were all kind of lost because this was unprecedented. They didn't have a clue what to do. They were looking at each other kind of, you know, what do we do next? And what they made a decision to do was to call another emergency hearing. And they scheduled it for 2 weeks out. This hearing took place last Wednesday. They decided at the last minute that we were not going to be allowed to make public comment at this meeting. And they also decided to hold it in a smaller venue than where they had been holding it. So there were just some last-minute changes that were a little bit worrisome. And we showed up at that meeting last Wednesday. We had a great number of people show up. The room was packed. We had people standing around the backs of the walls. And they discussed it. And they had one commissioner that got up initially, and he has just my cheers. His name is Dr. Robinson, Jason Robinson. He got up, and he said that there is no way that he would ever vote to approve any of these textbooks to go into our kids' classrooms. And he even said and called the publishers out and said, if there are any of the publishers here in the room today, I want you to know that, you know, I cannot believe the lack of integrity that was in these books, and I don't know how you put your heads on your pillows to sleep at night. So we were so encouraged that, you know, there was a commissioner standing out with that strong of a position. Then the chairman of the commission spoke out and basically said, and I could tell the minute the words were coming out of his mouth that this was setting the stage for what was getting ready to happen. He said, everybody needs to understand that it is not this commission's responsibility to review these books for content or bias. It is only our responsibility to assure that they meet the state standards before they're passed on to the local school districts, and then it's up to them. So if there are still concerns, basically you'll need to take it up at a local level. And they voted 3-2 to approve the list of textbooks.
Yeah. I've got to take another quick break. Okay. And when we get back, I want to talk about that because I definitely want to take this local again. Don't go away.
Absolutely.
We'll be right back on Inside Tennessee.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
On the next episode of Recipes for Disaster.
So we've got our neighbor Paul coming over tonight for a barbecue, which is why I prepared a delicious lemon rosemary steak marinade from my special collection of old family recipes. To make sure the steaks are extra, extra, extra tender, I left them marinating out on the counter overnight, just like Manna used to.
Maria may mean well, but without food safety, it never ends well.
Always thaw or marinate foods in the refrigerator at 40 degrees Fahrenheit or below. Or you could make your friends and family really sick. Maria's neighbor Paul didn't think twice about the steak he ate until he was presenting his company's financial forecast to the board. That's when a sudden bout of food poisoning made it explicitly clear that profits weren't the only thing on the rise.
Oh.
Watch Recipes for Disaster at foodsafety.gov. You'll learn the right steps as Maria does everything wrong. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
First thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one could change my mind but Mama tried.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176, and we are talking with Lisa Moore on the issue of textbooks. Lisa, before the break, you mentioned that the State Textbook Commission basically said it is up to your local state or your local school boards to determine what textbooks you use. Is that accurate?
That is accurate, yes. They essentially, for all practical purposes, washed their hands of it, did a blanket rubber stamp on all of the books. Well, let me back up. They did decide that was their whole way of getting into the motion, was they had one of the commissioners that said they pulled out a psychology book that we had reviewed that was particularly ugly as far as inappropriate materials for our kids. And they pulled it out and said, well, let's since this book was so bad, let's go ahead and take it out and then approve the rest of the books. So, you know, it was a sacrifice to try to appease us, but it was more ludicrous. They would have been better off just going ahead and approving all of them. You know, it didn't mean a thing. And yeah, that's exactly what they did. Dave, they said, you know, it's not our responsibility. The books met standards, and you know, you're going to have to. They didn't say it this way. These are my words, but you know, you're going to have to take it up with your local school boards or districts.
Well, and I'm all for taking it up with the local school boards and districts. But granted, you know, having something to take back. I mean, have they put that in writing? Have they made that a written policy? Is there something that we can take to our school boards and say, not just say, well, I was told that there was a meeting and they said it's up to you guys, but something in writing that we can take to our school boards so that weasel out of.
Right, absolutely. Well, they're still going to try to, at least if they're anything like the school board that we're dealing with here and the one I know that our friends over in Williamson County have been battling with. But, Dave, there is a place in the statute that pretty clearly outlines that they have the right to request a waiver and pick their own books. I don't have the statute in front of me, so I can't quote you section, you know, in verse right now, but it is in there. And if anyone wants to have access to it, we're going to be pulling together packets of information because that is one of our concerns, is that there are so many school districts and small counties out there who may have parents that don't even know what's going on, that don't understand what's happening in their kids' classrooms. And this is not just a Rutherford County and a Williamson County endeavor. This has got to be a grassroots movement throughout the entire state. So we are going to have some things coming out where we're going to be pulling things together for people to have a one-site resource to be able to access to get the information that we've already researched and done so they don't have to reinvent the wheel.
So you mentioned that there was going to be a committee hearing next week with Dolores Gresham on the Education Committee.
Yeah, Senator Gresham has called a special meeting of the Education Committee because of the concerns that she has been seeing and her level of concern, I think, with what's been going on with this whole textbook process. So she is holding hearings. They're next Monday and Tuesday, the 4th and the 5th. The Monday portion of the hearing will not start until 1 o'clock that afternoon. I don't know what room they're in yet, but they will be, of course, up at Legislative Plaza. And then Tuesday's hearing will start at 9 o'clock that morning. So at this juncture, of course, we are holding a lot of hope that when these legislators hear what we have to present and what's really in these books and how flawed the entire commission's process was. I don't know if they have the power to do this or not, Dave, but I'm hoping that they will somehow figure out a way to stop the textbooks in their tracks and to at least say, wait a minute, we've got to take a look at this and at least freeze the process. That was all we were asking the commission to really do to begin with. So I want to encourage anyone here in the state that is able to get over there, either of those 2 days or both of them, we need to have that room filled in a show of support for the parents and the citizens of this state that are concerned about these textbooks.
And do you know of any proposed legislation? You know, if anybody's got anything lined up for January
We have some terrific folks that have some things in the works. Some people that are very, very well respected up there that we know we're going to get some things moving through. And I knew that that was being worked on all along, Dave, but the concern is, you know, wait till January. This list of books is already so far down the road that it's going to be, it's like the snowball rolling downhill. You're not going to be able to stop it. And
right.
So that's why the process needs to be frozen and stopped now so it can be addressed appropriately before these books get into our kids' classrooms.
And, you know, I think something else, the commission, it was 3-2 to continue on. I think everybody in the state should be familiar with who the commissioners were that voted to continue on.
Absolutely. And we're going to have that posted in a press release that's coming out as well. And, Dave, the sad part about that also is there were 5 commissioners that didn't even bother to show up.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is sad.
So this 3-2 vote wasn't even half of the commission.
If they can't be there for something that important, they don't need to be on the commission at all.
Well, and from what we understand, there was one of these commissioners that didn't show up for any of the meetings. And I know we're running out of time, but I want to mention this too real quickly. Our commissioner of the Department of Education, Kevin Huffman, the
right.
commissioner over the entire state of Tennessee's education system, all of these textbook hearings that we went to, he didn't show up for a single one of them.
Wow.
Not one.
And he's the head of education in Tennessee.
Right. And these are textbooks that are going into our kids' classrooms for 6 years. And he knew there was a public outcry about them, and he still couldn't be bothered to show up for these meetings. That's disgraceful.
Yeah, and yet our governor defends the guy.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, I appreciate everything you've done on this. We got about 2 minutes left, and whatever you can tell me in that time about the different publishers. You mentioned Pearson as being one of the worst ones. Can you tell us a little more about them? And are you going to have information on the different publishers on this site you're putting together as well?
Yes, absolutely. And they were all, I mean, none of the publishers that submitted books for this were excused from any of this. I mean, they were all bad, but the levels and the degrees of the offensiveness and the issues with these books, the two probably that stuck out the most for me was Pearson and then a publisher called Bedford, Freeman, and Worth.
Right.
So...
And you say stuck out in terms of being pro-Islamic or anti-American or what specifically?
Both.
All of the
actually.
Above?
Mm-hmm. All of the above.
Well, now, is that the main thing that you see is the lack of balance and the pro-Islamic message? Are those the main offenses you see in these books, or is that just part of it?
Well, the lack of balance, but also the terrible lack of balance in our U.S. history books, too. And in such an agenda, an underlying theme of agenda through those two that I'll tell you real quickly, Dave, I'll end with, is that one of our reviewers, who is the constitutional attorney that I mentioned, he made the last presentation to the commission that night before they decided not to vote or approve them. And one of the things he said to them was, if these books are allowed into our children's classrooms, talking about the U.S. history books, it will result in nothing but our children learning how to hate their country.
Wow. You know, that needs to be taken to the committee meeting as well.
That's a strong statement.
Well, Lisa, I appreciate you.
We hope that he's going to be one of the ones to testify. So.
Well, I hope so, too. I appreciate you coming on, and I'd love to have you back sometime. Thanks for being with us.
I appreciate it, Dave. I enjoyed being with you. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
We'll see everybody next week on Inside Tennessee. Thanks for listening. Take care.